Hi there, it's Jared Mann from Investors Edge Real Estate, and thanks for joining me for a very special property investor update. And today I'm pretty excited because I'm interviewing one of Australia's most experienced property investors, none other than Michael Yardney, about his new book, Guide to Getting Rich. And plus we're going to have a bit of a chat about what's going on in the wider Australian market and the Perth market specifically. So, I first came across Michael about 12 years ago in an online property forum. I was just starting out, and he gave me some very valuable advice on renovation and development, which really helped some of my first couple of projects succeed. So I'm forever in debt to him. And for those that don't know Michael, I'll go through a bit of a intro from his bio, just so you know who we're speaking with today. And Michael Yardney is one of Australia's best-selling authors and leading experts in the psychology of success and wealth creation. His opinions are frequently quoted in the media. I'm sure if you read any property investment magazine, you have seen Michael's content in there. He challenges the traditional finance advice with innovative ideas on investment, personal finance, and wealth creation. Michael's wisdom stems from his substantial personal success and experience, as well as from mentoring over 2,000 business people, investors, and entrepreneurs over the last decade. And he's probably educated more successful property investors than anyone else in Australia. So I'm interested to hear what he has to say today. Welcome along, Michael.
Thank you, Jared, and thank you for that great introduction. I couldn't have written it better if I did it myself.
No worries. So, chatting about your new book today, A Guide to Getting Rich, a topic I'm very much interested in.
I think it's interesting because I think most Australians want to, Jared, and they many of the people listening and my clients also want to do it through property. But interestingly, most property investors fail. The statistics show it over and over again. 50% of people who get into property sell up in the first 5 years, and those who stay in, we know most never get past their first or second property. So this book was really written based on the mentoring of over 2,000 people over the last 10 years to work out what those who were successful were doing differently to what the average Australian was doing, because it's a lot more than just about property. It's just a lot more than about how many shares you own, how good your business is, and that's why I wrote my Guide to Getting Rich, Jared.
So why is it that most Australians then never get out of the rat race despite earning good living?
Well, if we first of all put it in context, Jared, we're living in the wealthiest country in the world. Interestingly, Australians comprise about 1.5 million of the top 1% of the planet's wealthiest people. To be in the wealthiest 1%, Jared, you've got to be in the have net wealth of about US$710,000. To be in the top 10% of the wealthy people, you only have to have US$71,000. So that's why we're very lucky. But despite that, despite earning a good living, most Australians retire with very little, and they're dependent upon the government. And in my mind, it's because they've got poor money habits. It's as simple as, for many people, it's just they spend more than they earn. They're not financially fluent. They've never been taught how to do money, Jared.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So is it really true, you hear the saying, the rich keep getting richer? Is that what you found to be the case?
Well, it's not just
why
what
is
I
that
found,
so?
The statistics. Well, the statistics prove it, Jared. One of the things in my mind is that they've got the right mindset. Look, sure, they got more money, but they're financially fluent. They've got good money habits. And some of these habits are what creates their wealth. And I call it a financial thermostat. Their financial thermostats are set higher. So they have habits that reinforce it. They have to-do lists. A lot of us do, but they actually take action. They do things. They do successful time management. They continuously educate themselves and learn. And I guess that's what you're doing, and one of the reasons I'm impressed with you and what you've done there in Western Australia, and you're continuously improving and learning. I've followed your successes as well, and that's great. So one of the habits of successful people is they keep learning. Most Australians don't bother to invest, and those that do, they've got the wrong system. They follow the wrong strategy. They've got the wrong mindset, and it's not always their fault. I mean, if you were like me, Jared, you were probably taught by your parents to work hard, to get a good education. Working hard doesn't get you there, so we actually have to learn to work smarter and swap to the results for money economy, Jared.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you've just mentioned a few things there, but if you are poor and you find yourself in that position, and you know, I certainly started out that way myself, what can you do kind of right away to get on that track of financial success? Can you break it down for us a bit?
Okay, I think if we're poor, the most common thing, and it sounds simple, but don't underestimate the benefit of it, is you actually have to spend less than you earn. That goes way back to that great book, The Richest Man in Babylon. So spend less than you earn and invest the difference, and then reinvest it and keep reinvesting until you build yourself a cash machine, a big enough asset base. The other thing, Jared, you can start doing is hanging out with the right people. It's been said that you're similar to, you know, the 5-10 best friends you've got. If you're a bike rider, you're going to hang around with other fit people who ride bikes. If you want to become wealthy, I'm not saying dump your old friends. What I'm saying is that if you want to become rich, also associate with rich people. They're two good ways to start, Jared.
No, that makes a lot of sense, and I've certainly done that myself, so... What are the biggest financial mistakes Australians tend to make? Because when you start making those, it can really set you back and make it very difficult to get started. Is there any way people can...
Sure. I think one of the big mistakes they make, as I've already said, is they spend more than they earn, because they actually have no idea where their money's going. They don't have a budget. They don't have control of their money. They don't really know what goes in and out, do they? They also, So first of all, you've got to put it, because people say, yeah, I know, I budget, but they actually don't, and when you actually get them to put it on paper, they get an idea. Now, I know this sounds basic, it sounds banal, but in fact, if you're stuck, if you're no further advanced than you, well, not as far advanced as you want to be, you start with those. For example, don't buy things you can't afford. Impulse spending. Credit card traps is a big issue. People buy a lot today with tomorrow's money, and they pay interest on it. So I use credit cards all the time, Jared. I love the bonus frequent flyer points, but I have never not paid my card out at the end of the month. So I guess that's one of the big mistakes you asked, that is starting with having spending too much. Another one is actually planning their retirement or their investment too late. They don't start saving, they don't start investing until they're later, and they don't get the benefit of compounding. I bet you see lots of clients who come in too in their 50s and say, oh, you know, I want to retire in 5 years, in 10 years, but it's too hard then, isn't it?
The real urgency to it then, isn't there? And I don't have the time for it to work. It's never too late to get started, but you know, it's never too late. You can really get that.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in the current environment, which I hope we're going to have a chance to talk about, because as we move into a lower inflation, lower capital growth environment, you're not going to have the huge capital growth that Perth and other markets experienced over the last couple of years. So we've got to, I guess you would like to have time on your side. I guess another, if we talk about financial mistakes that you asked me, they don't insure themselves. I think people should have accident insurance and illness insurance, loss of income insurance, because if you see people, unfortunately, things do go wrong, and they don't have an emergency fund, so they don't have the money up their sleeve in case things go wrong. Other financial mistakes I see people make is, I guess it's the psychological bit of thinking they don't deserve to be rich. They think it's a privilege to the lucky people. Another one is, as we said, I think a minute ago, they don't read, they don't learn, they're poor, and they're content with what they know, while the rich, they're consistently exercising their brain. They hang out with the wrong people, and again, this is not a judge of people. I don't judge people on how much money they've got or how wealthy they are, but they actually do have to associate with your peers who will question you and encourage you. And I think a lot of people, when they do invest, they play it safe. They diversify. They, rather than specialising in something, they're trying to avoid risk, and that's important, but they don't often recognise the biggest risk is with themselves. And one other big mistake, if I could throw it in, is that they hand over their financial future to salespeople. Now, I'm not saying don't hand it over because you're in the business of looking after people's financial interests, as am I, but I'm suggesting don't hand over your financial education to other people. So
yeah,
become educated, learn, know what you're doing, and then you will understand the difference between a salesperson and a consultant who's working for you. So you're definitely allowed to outsource the implementation of things if you're not good at property development or property investment or don't know the local market, but you shouldn't outsource the education. That's a list of some of the financial mistakes, Jared.
That makes a lot of sense. I guess, you know, in recent times, and certainly since our GFC, people have pretty good reason to be sceptical, and, you know, I myself have seen a ton of get-rich schemes come and go over the years, you know, companies here the next day ripping people off the next and gone, you know, the year after that. And what are you suggesting is different in the book?
That's a good question, because there's hundreds of books, I don't know, thousands of books on getting rich quick on the shelves, aren't there? I'm actually very proud that mine's now been published in Australia, but it's being translated into Chinese. Fudan University thought it was worth doing and selling to the Chinese, and being sold in the United Kingdom and in America. But I guess why it's different is, first of all, there's no get-rich-quick scheme. Now, that's a big problem. A lot of people want to get rich quick, and I love one of Warren Buffett's good sayings, that wealth is the transfer of money from the impatient to the patient. But the book's based on my 40 years of investment experience. Jared, I've paid a huge learning fee over the years to making a lot of the mistakes. So it's not that I'm that smart. I've just made a lot of the mistakes, and I've seen a lot of other people who've done it. But along the way,
anyone else?
Yeah, you've got to get up on more time. And the other thing is, I've learned the concept of mentors. And when I actually realized that I didn't have to do it all myself, or I didn't have to know it all myself, but I could stand on the shoulders of my mentors and see further forward, that's when my investing, and in fact my life in all sorts of ways, grew to the next level. So that's the lessons I have learned. And as I said, I started my mentorship program back in 2006, and there's been over 2,000 people gone through it, some very, very successfully, and to be honest, others who chose not to complete it or didn't change their mindset as much as I'd like. And I guess I've distilled those lessons, and that's what the book's about.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly looking forward to getting my copy and getting stuck into it. What I thought I'd also find out from you is many of us Perth investors would have seen you know, pretty down market over the last couple of years, and you guys over East have had a pretty, you know, good time over the last couple of years, but many people are suggesting that we're in a bit of a property bubble and prices are going to crash. What's your take on that?
Okay. Well, first of all, my experience is not just based in the east coast of Australia, because our research department does a lot of work around Australia. And the last time I was in Perth was only not even a fortnight ago. And we have a lot of clients from Western Australia as well. So we've got to research in what's going on there. And you in Western Australia are now at that stage of the property cycle that comes after a boom. So for a number of years, you had strong economic growth, strong wages growth, which then led to people coming in, and this was, of course, related to the mining boom, and people came in, and then there's this whole new concept of fly-in, fly-out workers as well. But anyone in Western Australia could go up to one of the mines and earn $150,000 a year just sweeping the floors. And so that left a lot of people in Perth needing employees, and so even simple jobs, people got reasonably high wages. So what happened, I believe, over a couple of years was people set their expectations, their budgets, their lifestyles, their investment purchases, on the expectation of a reasonably high income. And then, like every other boom that came to an end, the mining construction boom has come to an end. They're still producing, but unfortunately that's a little bit down also because of the price of iron ore and other minerals. But it's the end of the construction boom where they don't need as many people now. But as that's unraveled, The mining towns were never investment grade areas, in my opinion. But in Perth, it also suffered because people's budgets and expectations and lifestyle and new houses were based on incomes that were probably not sustainable. Now, your government, the local government's trying hard, and there's a lot of infrastructure. It's trying to re-employ people to do a lot of the building. You know, there's so many cranes around. Unfortunately, in the process of that, some of it's good construction, some of it's the infrastructure construction, but some of it also is the new and off-the-plan properties that were a good idea at the time, Jared, when they started to look at them 5 years ago, when they started to come up with the concept and buy the land and get development approval. But there's a long lag time for those, so there's still quite a few coming out, and there's going to be a difficult time there. Having said that, you're, I believe, coming close to the bottom of this. There's been a couple of years of difficult times in Western Australia, and that part of my investment strategy has always been to accept the concept that over any 10-year period, you're going to have 2 or 3 good years of property growth. You're going to have 18 months, and in your case, it was even a little bit longer, maybe 2 years of the boom stages. And for 3, 4, 5 of the 10-year cycle, not that there's actually 10 years in a cycle, it's not a fixed time, but over a decade to a period, most of the property... So, yeah, most of the property market is going to be flat. So it doesn't go up consistently. It sort of goes up, goes down a little bit. Yours has gone down a bit more. But then the next up will be higher than the last up. So you're basically still underpinned by a lovely economy, a good state, people who own their own homes. People don't sell up their homes when things are tough. So I can't see a bubble bursting in the capital cities like Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Perth. Yes, will it happen in Port Hedland? Well, it already has, as it happened in Mandurah, in Whyalla. Of course it has, because those areas are not underpinned by multiple growth drivers. But what's underpinning Perth's property values is the fact that 70% of people in Perth are owner-occupiers, and they'd rather eat dog food than sell up their homes. So they're not going to sell up their homes. They're basically going to keep their homes, even if it takes a little bit longer. Half of the people, though, don't have a mortgage. The older people don't. And those who do have a mortgage, the baby boomers who've borrowed to buy things, or the young people, in general, most of them are still reasonably far ahead as interest rates are falling, and so they're up to date with their mortgage payments. So you're not seeing delinquencies. So why would the bubble not burst? To make a bubble burst, as opposed to a correction, you're having a correction in Western Australia, but that's not a crash. A crash, in my mind, is when people have to sell and haven't got anyone to buy. So I'm talking about Perth not having a crash, but if you go to Port Hedland, for example, or any of those other mining towns, there, if you try to sell, there's no buyers at all. And so why would that happen in Perth? It would happen if interest rates were extraordinarily high and nobody could keep their mortgage payments. That's not happening. No, that's not in sight. It's if there's unemployment at such a high level that people haven't got a job and can't keep their homes. That's not happening. It's if there was a major depression, not a recession for 1 or 2quarters, or if there's a substantial credit squeeze where, like APRA has given us a hard time, or the government or Reserve Bank give us a difficult time. But that's not in their interest. They don't want that. Our banking system is underpinned by the residential real estate. So I can't see a reason why in the capital cities there's going to be a crash. This has been a bigger correction in Western Australia based on a biggish boom. The bigger the boom, the bigger you go above fair market value, the longer and the deeper the correction. But those people who have gotten through up to now, hang on, because you're getting near the end.
Yeah. We've already seen signs that are starting to flatten out. But
other than in some submarkets, aren't there? The sub-segments of the off-the-plan is not what I'd be looking at, but there are certain segments I would be looking at. Yes, yes.
Many of our clients are often, you know, trying to time that perfect bottom of the market and really asking themselves, you know, when do I get in? Is it too, you know, do I buy in now? Do I wait? What would you say to those people?
Jared, my answer today is different to what I would have probably said 10 or 15 years ago. I very much was believed in counter-cyclical investing because that's what I was taught by my mentors, and it's good to actually get in at the when everyone else is getting out. Buy, be fearful when others are greedy, and be greedy when others are fearful. But over the years, and having mentored all these people, I've actually learned that successful investors seem to do well in good times and do just as well in difficult times. And it's interesting, you've probably met a number of your clients as well who do poorly in good times and do even worse in bad times. And so for the successful investors, timing the market and the stage of the cycle doesn't make a lot of difference to them. And for the unsuccessful ones, timing the market and the stages of the cycle doesn't make a lot of difference to them either. So while of course you don't want to buy right near the boom and then have to wait for a period of time, I see that the opportunities of the current part of the Western Australian market cycle mean that you're going to buy things on special. If there were a special at David Jones or Myers and 20% off, you know, your wife and my wife would love to buy them. but we don't do that with property, do we?
You actually have to be able to fund it. Type of property for you, don't you?
Exactly. And it's also the sort of property to which you can add value. So don't wait for the market to do the heavy lifting. And I know you've got a similar interest to me in added value and capital growth, doing developments and things like that. So you've got to be really careful because just because things have been rezoned in Western Australia, a lot of the suburbs have been, and just because you can do a development doesn't necessarily mean it's financially feasible to do it. So not everything that's developable stacks up. But there are opportunities even at this stage of the cycle, but not get rich quick. It's not going to happen as fast as it did a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you did mention there that a successful investor can do well in any market, and I just thought we'd bring it back to your book to touch on the five levels of wealth and why do they matter, because, you know, it is important to educate yourself and start with that first so that you can succeed in any market, isn't it?
Sure. Well, there's a number of different models I have put in my book, and one is the different levels of wealth, as you mentioned. The other is the different levels of investor as well. And really what happens is you've got to, depending upon where you are in your investment journey, do different things and actually learn different things because you've got different leverage points. So if you're still a beginner, your job is going to be to educate yourself, as I said a moment ago, not just hand it over to other people. And if you're a beginner, you've also got to educate yourself financially and in investment concepts and then move to the next level where you're going to start saving, and the next level of wealth then, because most Australians are financially unstable. They live from paycheck to paycheck. The money runs out before the end of the month does. The next level of wealth is out of financial stability. When they've accumulated a number of assets, a small group of Australians get financially secure, but to become financially free, to become financially abundant, you actually have to build a cash machine, a cash machine that will bring up money each month, even if you're not working. And to do that, in my mind, you need assets, not cash flow. So most investors invest for cash flow because that's what you read in the books, that's what you see in the seminars, that's what you get on the magazines. But the wealthy people, while average Australian is trying to build their cash flow, the wealthy people build assets. Step one is asset growth. Step two, lowering your loan-to-value ratio. Step three is then starting to live off your cash machine. So in my mind, it's asset growth that's going to be important to secure our futures.
Oh, I think that's probably a good note to finish on there, Michael. I really appreciate your time today, and people can learn more by going out and getting your book, Your Guide to Getting Rich.
Well, you can go to guidetogettingrich.com and you can get it online, or it's available in most bookshops, and actually it's now right throughout newsagents as well. I know a lot of newsagents in Western Australia pick it up. They don't normally get books, but it's doing so well. So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to have a chat, Jared.
Thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.